saw these come in, and knowing full well that the entire membership is going to know that this is happening within minutes, I sent an update to the membership saying that the union has received these notices without prior notice that they were going out, and we will be addressing it with the employer. Shortly after that, the employer started holding meetings with those who were on site about the layoffs, again, without notice to the union and without affording these impacted members their right to union representation. So when I received that information, I immediately went down to the SFSS with the intention of stopping those meetings because that was contrary to the collective agreement. It's contrary to basic employment code. So when I did that, I absolutely did that firmly. I did it loudly. I have no apologies for how I choose to protect members. Well, I shouldn't say not choose to. It was necessary to shut it down. I confronted two leads in the department, the HR lead and operations lead. Both denied that these were layoff meetings, but what else would you call them? I then confronted the SFSS president about it, and he claimed that the members did not need union representation. And I did raise my voice, and I said that is not his decision to make. This is their right, and we should have been notified. So that was that. That's what happened. And of course, I don't like engaging on that level, but we have to firmly and loudly protect the collective agreement and members' rights. And when they're being when they're being violated to such a high degree, we have no choice but to act in that manner. So we left, we spoke with the impacted members briefly, and then we left, and then we're here picking up the pieces after that. In terms of Section 54 and how it should go and how it should have gone and what we're trying to course correct at this time is so the notice is served to the union, and then the union and the employer would then meet over a series of meetings, the labor adjustment meetings, to decide how this is going to go. We would talk about everything from voluntary severance, if they want to put out a call for those that want to leave employment and offer enhanced severance above the collective agreement, ensure seniority is protected, other aligning articles are protected, and then we then pick we have we arrange a schedule to have these meetings in person to ensure that the member is there with the appropriate HR forms and information that they prepare, and that their union rep is there with them after. Because after this news is delivered, it is very hard for the impacted person, and that's where we are there. We pick up those pieces, we have those conversations, we walk them through their options in a collective agreement. This is usually done in conjunction. That's the collaboration part. It's not to proceed in a way that the employer thinks it should. It's very much an involved process between both parties, the union and the employer, and that did not happen. So we're kind of reacting after the fact, trying to figure out how to protect both the impacted members as well as those who remain and the collective agreement. So we remained firm that we had to proceed with either bargaining or labor adjustment, and they would have to if we proceeded with bargaining, we would have to rescind. They would have to rescind the notices of layoffs because there's no other way to proceed with bargaining, knowing full well the cat is out of the bag. Let's just try and get something done that we need to get done. So it ended up being the labor adjustment meetings, and we agreed to use the already scheduled bargaining dates for the labor adjustment meetings. And the reason being, again, time and logistics. You can't do both at the same time. August only had at that point, I think, what. We had 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks left. So that's what we were working with. And we had our first labor adjustment meeting on August 5th. That part is very confidential at this point. I won't speak to the specifics, but I will say that we approached it with at least an interest in understanding each other's perspectives, which were the positions were reconfirmed, and we're looking to go from there. I unfortunately had to cancel the one this week on Monday because I was very unwell. I couldn't even hold a remote meeting, and then we'll next be meeting with them next week. The employer had to cancel yesterday's meeting, and I can't say why yet. I would like to update the membership first on that.
Wow. Okay.
That's just a brief summary.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's been a lot. It's been very stressful. It's been very, very hard on not just those who receive those notices to operate in a limbo. It's been hard on the colleagues as well because they're stressing about losing their colleagues, their friends, and then the workload because we still don't have any explanation as to how integral work is just going to dissipate and not fall onto other people.
That was one thing I wanted to ask about too, because one of these layoffs was that of the student advocate position. And that's a pretty significant
It is.
role to essentially not have anymore. And has the SFSS, to your
No.
knowledge, expressed any sort of not necessarily replacement, but accommodation in lieu.
No, the only thing I think they're looking at is what services within SFU would support the need, but I don't know that for sure. Like, that's the only thing I can think that they're doing. For QP's end, we have filed a grievance on the notice of layoffs for violating 8 collective agreement articles, as well as 2 sections of the BC Labour Code. That's how serious this is. This is not a small matter. It is not operating in at all the manner that it should. It is fundamentally an egregious process that the SFSS has started.
And
And I will say, for the, I just want to say that I do understand the budget, the reasons given were budget. I do understand the concerns that they have expressed. We know that in this climate, that is a management right to restructure and to lay off. We know we can't stop it. The goal is to ensure that it proceeds fairly according to all relevant legislation.
have there been any members of executive that you've been able to, I guess, express this to, or that share similar sentiments to that of the union?
I would welcome that opportunity. I was hesitant to know whether I should or not because my understanding is that council makes these votes, so it ended up being a majority vote. SFSS operations are a little bit vague and clouded, and I don't like that. But then again, we don't have a right to know how SFSS internal operations work beyond what is for the union. I would welcome that opportunity to speak with those that made this decision. Absolutely. I haven't formally requested it, but since this is going out, they'll get it now. We do meet with, so our meetings take place with the SFSS president and the three leads. So the operations lead, the HR lead, ooh, and I think it's the services lead. So that they are, so the SFSS president is a representative, obviously, of the decision makers and then the leads for the workforce. So I'm anticipating that the decisions and discussions are, they update on their side and that I'm assuming without having knowing that the executive is in line with what's happening, but I don't know. It would be really good to understand how this decision was made, what a majority decision actually entailed, like how many council members attended that, if they were provided all the facts of how this was going to play out, to know that this is proceeding in such an egregious way, because all they have is their side. I actually would welcome the opportunity to present, okay, this is why this has to go this way. It doesn't need to be an adversarial process. It's not going to be easy, but it doesn't need to result in a breakdown of labor relations, and things not proceeding according to process tend to end up that way.
Was this something that came as a surprise to the positions that were laid off? Have you been in communication with them, and have they expressed sort
We're
of?
in as yeah, we're in as much communication as we can be. Things are moving really quickly, as well as we have another serious priority that has we've had to pivot and deal with at the same time. And the union only office only has 3 people for about 1,000 members, so you can imagine that we can't pivot as quickly and update everyone as fast as we would like to. But we're trying. What we have communicated is that what the union is looking to do, which is obviously protect the work, protect the collective agreement, protect those who are impacted. So we have to follow what we, and this is in conjunction with advice from QP National as well. It's not just what the local thinks best. But we did have a meeting with them. Was it last week or the week before? My weeks are a little fuddled. I think it was the 31st. So I am working on an update given some changing situations for this week to send out to the SFSS members. We did update the SFSS with a formal letter, letting them know QP's position in response to them. So they have received that. And as a result, that's why they canceled Wednesday's labor adjustment meeting. And they also canceled Monday's. So we're next meeting with them on Wednesday, which is very little time at this point. As a point of reference, and SFU is a big machine, we had 11 meetings with them before we were able to come to a labor adjustment agreement. 11. And they have all their processes in place from beginning to end. So it's a very, very complex, very involved, very heavy process. And I tried to stress that to them, but I don't think they understood how hard it's going to be.
How has Coopy's relationship been with the SFSS in the past? Considering the executive is a body that changes yearly, have there been past incidents where there have been sort of violations or disagreements between either party?
There has been. Our relationship tends to go up and down. I think for our part, QP really does try to approach things as transparently, collaboratively, and professionally as possible. We're not always going to disagree. We are going to very much disagree. That's the nature of employer and union relations, but we don't need to do it in a way that breaks down the way that we communicate. We actually pride ourselves on taking the initiative and doing the introductions with each team and letting them know that we understand that they are elected student bodies, that this might be their first time in such a position, that they're both responsible to the students, but they're also wearing the employer hat, and that's a big role to step into. So we really encourage them to read the collective agreement, to reach out to us if they have any questions. If it's a, we even say if it's an off the record question because you're trying to understand, we have those conversations when we've established trust. The difficulty is that by the time you've gotten to know one another and establish that relationship and be able to build that trust, there's a new team in place. And it's really, really, really impossible to build continuity when there's a changing leadership every year. It makes it very difficult to build labor relations, but we do it every year because that is our job. We want to start off on the right foot with everybody. We had laughs with the new team at the first meeting. So I'm really disappointed that it's gone so sideways. I think it could have gone better. But it is what it is. We are here. And we will ensure, we will push with all our might to ensure members are protected. That's ultimately what we're here for. We've told them that where we are wrong, we will pull back. We have no problem admitting that. Our egos are not in this. We're doing the jobs to our best of our ability. We're going to mess up, and we acknowledge that, change, and move forward.
Have there been any updates from the SFSS that you are able to share at all? You know, have they acknowledged any sort of QP's claims regarding violations of the collective agreement?
No, that was pretty much the notice that we sent to them on August 12th, because after the first discussion, we really came back struggling on where we were supposed to go, because we're really not even between a rock and a hard place. We're finding it impossible to pivot in a way that makes sense. Our only goal is to come through this. Well, I shouldn't say our only goal. Our main goal is to come through this to ensure the CA and labor code is protected. We needed acknowledgement in a certain way from that discussion. We did not get it. We needed at least an openness to consider that the notice of layoffs were handled improperly. We did not get that. So on August 12th, we did serve a formal letter letting them know the discussion did not result in any acknowledgement from the employer of its violation of both the collective agreement and the BC Labor Code. We went on to explain why and what our position is and ask them for a decision on proceeding with bargaining, because we can get this done. It'd be a really crunch time, but we've done it before. We can do it. The members really need a new collective agreement in place. They really need a little bit of wage lift, and we just want to see that concluded. We asked for a decision at the Wednesday meeting that was scheduled to be at 1 o'clock yesterday. So that would have been August 13th. And they canceled that meeting and said they'll get back to us next week.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to move forward when you're constantly receiving cancellations. I know mine on Monday was unexpected, but people are sick. I get it. but it was an unfortunate cancellation, because I think that they could have provided us with an answer, and we could have moved forward with the time that we had.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just trying to wrap my head around all of it.
I mean, I can let you know how the letter ended, because I'll be sending this update to the members either today or tomorrow. Not the full letter, but just a summary. But like, we've always approached our discussions with an open mind to working collaboratively with the employer and while maintaining the union's commitment to legal processes. We have never shied away from saying that. We have a commitment to our processes. We are always labor adjustment meetings. The purpose of those are to engage in agreements outside of the collective agreement. We can do that. We have stressed that to the employer, that the collective agreement is not binding in the sense that we can't go above and beyond or outside of it. But that has to be something that's mutually agreed upon. But we can't even get to those discussions. We're hitting such a fundamental roadblock between a misapplication and a misunderstanding, and not even a misunderstanding, I would say a blatant disregard for how this is supposed to go. So we're open to keeping discussions going, but we can't keep circling in a way that is the employer has a hard line and there's no way to move beyond that. Then we also have to explore our legal options.
Right. Yeah. Because this isn't just a disagreement. This is a matter of legality.
It's legislation. This is not just a difference of opinion or interpretation of the CA. It's black and white legislation.
Do you have any idea, I guess, of when there may be more updates on this situation.
I was really hoping that we would have had a discussion yesterday. I was really hoping that we'd have something before the end of the week. Realistically, I don't think we'll get anything from the SFSS before the 20th.
Okay.
Yeah, I remain open to hearing it, but I doubt we'll get anything before that. Just knowing, just based on how the communications have gone thus far.
Okay.
And I know that the SFSS thought that we were delaying, but we needed time to consult. Our national rep was on vacation, which everybody's entitled to do. And good for her that she was not within, like we all tend to have our phones on us, but good thing that she was in a place where you didn't have cell phone reception, because then you get drawn into this. So in a time where we had our rep away, we have to result on other national resources who also have their own full workload. So things are moving a little bit slower than I think either party would have liked, but it is what it is. And we just asked for patience. We asked for understanding. At no point did we say we weren't willing to come to the table. We just asked for time to be able to consult. This is a legal process that, while I'm familiar with on Section 54, I was not familiar with on it being violated. So I did not want to react. I wanted to respond methodically, and that takes time. SFSS thought that within the week of issuing notices, the fact that we did not meet with them meant what we were intentionally delaying. No, we had other prior. We have six employers. We don't always have the option to. My schedule is set, I want to say, 2.5, 3 weeks in advance. Like that's so I don't have the luxury of just pivoting, but emergencies require it. But I also need to know what I'm responding to.
All right, I believe that's all I had to ask. If you have anything else that you would like to share regarding the situation, please do.
I really would. I would encourage a student body to press the council for explanation on this. I think this impacts them significantly from the fall. This is not next year. This is in a matter of weeks. They will see serious impacts to their educational and student experience. And I think they deserve answers. I think there's accountability here and transparency that's lacking. Yeah. And I would ask for everyone to please be kind to the QP staff, and because there's things being said online which we cannot control, but online bullying and harassment has a real effect on people, and the staff are significantly dedicated to the work that they do. Members routinely give of their own pocket to support student-funded programs, like the food bank. Like they do really good things from the goodness of their heart because they're dedicated to their work and their work ethic. So I would really ask for kindness both in person and online to all staff right now. They're going through a really difficult time.
Once again, that was our interview with the QP3338 Union President, Shaneza Bacchus. And yeah, currently, as far as I know, there haven't been any major developments on this situation, but as soon as there are, you will be hearing them here on Speak Up. And to end off the hour, we have another piece, but this is coming from Nanaimo, from our friends at CHLY and fellow LJI journalist Lauren McKenzie. This is a piece on why the whole sort of Buy Canadian movement is drawing more shoppers in Nanaimo to the local farmers market. And, you know, if there's anything that is worth supporting in this economy, in this system, I would say it's a farmers market. Anyways, here's that piece.
This is a CHY News update. When threats of a trade war between Canada and the United States at the beginning of this year started to grow, a lot of Canadians stopped and took a closer look at where their produce was coming from. Now, many Nanaimoites are turning away from large grocery store chains to shopping more at local markets.
I think people were really seeking local, and they know when they walk through our gates that they're going to get, they don't have to check labels. They know everything's local here.
That was Michelle Green, market manager for the Island Roots Market Cooperative, a year-round market that happens every Wednesday at Bevan Park. Green says since January, the market has seen a 30% increase in customers. The market sells a lot of locally grown produce, baked goods, and handcrafted items. Many of the vendors are from the Nanaimo area, with some coming from Victoria and the Southern Gulf Islands. She says that since tariffs were first introduced, more people have started shopping at the market.
Everybody here has to make it, bake it, grow it, or forage it locally. So all the vendors are local and they all grow locally. So yeah, I make sure as much as I can. It's easy to tell when someone's reselling. We don't allow reselling.
The market is year-round, so what is sold here depends on the season. Green says some of the vendors have been able to find ways to extend their growing seasons or protect the vegetables, offering locally grown produce longer into the season.
People aren't as aware of seasons until maybe they start shopping at a market. Like, I certainly wasn't before I worked here. But people will come up and ask for potatoes when they're not in season yet. And there is a lot of questions. Why don't you have fruit in January?
It wasn't just farmers markets that were emphasizing Canadian produce. Grocery stores, big and small, have joined the Buy Canadian movement with ads, offers, and promotions of Canadian products. But how Canadian is the produce these grocery stores are bringing in? That's what Todd Maffin wanted to find out.
Anyway, I remember at the start of this, you couldn't find any salad kits or any lettuce that wasn't American. And now I'm seeing like only salad kits that are from Canada. And
on his grocery runs, he started noticing that not all stores were equal. Some had big focuses on selling Canadian produce, but others did not. So Maffin decided that he wanted to write a report for his newsletter, figuring out where the produce being sold in Nanaimo grocery stores were coming from. Maffin, who became a local celebrity in Nanaimo after organizing a mass visit of Americans to spend the weekend in Nanaimo, went to 8 different grocery stores in the city and audited where each type of produce came from.
We will see in the stores what we buy as a community. So if we want to see more Canadian produce in the store, or to be a little more accurate, if we want to see less American product in the store, we need to be buying less American product. Those numbers, those sales numbers, are what the stores use to determine whether or not they're going to buy it.
He used 2 clickers and over 2 days in July noted down where the produce came from. He determined where the produce came from based on labels that read product of or made in. Products listed with packaged in or imported by were not considered. Maffin found that despite the flashy Shop Canadian advertising, 40% of items counted at all 8 stores were labeled as American, or the country of origin could not be determined. Stores with the most American produce tended to be the larger chain grocery stores, like Walmart, Patterson-owned grocery stores like Save On Foods, and the Real Canadian Superstore.
It was, obviously a lot higher. It was more than 40% was American or ambiguous. So that's disappointing, especially when we are in a season where there's a lot of Canadian fruit available right now. We're in China, the growing season. So, yeah, I was disappointed to see that.
CHY reached out to the grocery stores featured in Maffin's report. 3 of the companies replied to CHY by email, sending statements about their work to make sure Canadian produce is sold in their stores. Walmart Canada and Loblaws, which owns Real Canadian Superstore, each sent statements to CHY. A spokesperson from Walmart Canada says that part of their ongoing commitment to support local growers and meet customer demands year-round, they offer both local and imported produce. Loblaws told CHOY they have programs and partnerships in place to bring in local produce from Vancouver Island and the rest of the province whenever they can, including bringing in BC-grown cherries when imported cherries could have been cheaper. In the report, Maffin also found that independently owned grocery stores had the lowest percentage of American produce, with Fairway Market, Country Grocer, and the Nanaimo Foods and Vegetable Market with the lowest percentages of American produce. Paul Sandu, Country Grocer's Director of Produce Operations, told CHY that Country Grocer's policy is to buy produce from Vancouver Island first, then from BC, then from elsewhere. Sandu says, quote, "The only items we carry from the USA would be items that are not available here or offshore during growing seasons, such as currently watermelon, grapes, and a few other items," end quote. On a busy Wednesday afternoon, CHY spoke with shoppers at the Island Roots Market Cooperative.
What did you guys purchase today?
We bought some pies and some local produce, some beets, zucchini. What else would it be best?
Some smoked salmon.
Smoked salmon, yeah.
Do you come to this market quite often?
I did last year. This is the first time I've been this year, so.
Why are you coming back now for the first time?
I just wanted to see what the different vendors had to offer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like fresh produce, so.
I always like to go places that are supporting local and a place I can bring my dog and be outside, so it's just an enjoyable shop.
Well, she lives here, and she always tells me how great it is to come, so we had to come and stop by and buy a little bit and see. It's just beautiful. I come from way further north, and yeah, this is not the kind of thing I'm used to seeing.
Since the trade war started in January, have you noticed that you've been focusing a lot on buying more Canadian goods?
Or yeah, absolutely. No, I always do. Unless it's, you know, I need a lime or usually lemon or celery. Those are hard to come by, but I just try not to buy it at all. Not at all. No.
Do you guys like to purchase local produce or goods whenever you can?
No, because we go for the best price, so we at the usual supermarket, you know, Save On Foods, Thrifties, that's where we shop when things are on sale.
What did you buy here today?
I bought some mushrooms and a scone.
Do you come to this market often?
Yeah, sometimes every week and sometimes not, but I really like it. It's one of the nicer ones. It's on grass, which I really like. It really makes a difference to the mood, you know? And the music's good, and there's all sorts of vendors. But I'm big on the Buy Canada. I'm huge on that. I couldn't find a onion that wasn't from the States in the supermarket, so I complained to the produce manager and the till lady, and I wrote a letter to head office. It's an onion. I get it. But I just got no time for those fascist people down south.
And did you sort of start focusing on buying Canadian back when the tariff war started happening in January, or has this been a long time thing?
Oh, no. It was, when they started attacking us, I just went cold turkey. Except I did buy an onion.
Sometimes you have to, right?
But onions are in season now, so it's all good.
Aaron Grant has been a full-time farmer for over 5 years, selling a wide variety of fruits and vegetables and tending a 2-acre farm.
We harvest most of the stuff the day of the market. You know, I bake bake goods and do my canning in my own kitchen and stuff. And so, yeah, it's definitely from our farm here in Nanaimo. We're the closest farm to the farmer's market, actually. Yeah, just 10 minutes away.
The Island Roots Market has always been where a majority of his sales are made. He says since the start of this year, he has seen a 25% increase in sales.
It's come across in discussion that people are deciding to buy local and, you know, looking for local carrots and looking for local onions and things. And there's certainly been, you know, people who have been, you know, commenting that that's their primary reason to come to the market for the first time. A lot of first timers have been coming through the farmers market.
As Canadians are deciding where to put their money when it comes to produce, and grocery stores are choosing to bring in more local produce into their stores, Maffin says maybe one day Canadians will have an easier time deciding to shop Canadian.
Obviously, I'd like us to get to a point where we have no American product, produce or otherwise. The reality is we're never going to get there because there's just some things that simply do not grow in Canada. But and some people do want the choice, and we should have that for people. You know, I mean, none of this is to suggest that regardless of your economic circumstances, you should, you know, go into debt or be put in a precarious financial position just for this Buy Canada thing. There's some people who can only afford the cheapest products, and often those are American products. So, you know, everyone still has to make their own decision. But for families like ours, where we have some flexibility in what we buy, we're certainly going to be choosing to buy not American.
Maffin says he hopes his report reminds Canadians the next time they're grocery shopping to take a closer look at where their produce is coming from. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you to CHLY and Lauren McKenzie for that piece. We have reached the end of this hour of Speak Up, but I want to thank you all so much for tuning in this hour, this Tuesday here at CJSF. We've got a lot of good programming coming your way. We've got, you know, as per usual, we have Democracy Now! Coming right your way in about 30 seconds. We also have Raccoon City. We have a lot of really, really cool programming that is coming your way. So make sure you stay tuned for all of it. And with that being said, I have nothing else to say. So I hope you enjoyed those pieces that I had played for all of you this hour. Some pretty lengthy interviews, some more, I guess, script and clip interview style pieces, but all for you.